We're talking today to CEO Steve Coe about something called a crisis respite center. And we now have one in Lower Manhattan on 2nd Avenue, 315 2nd Avenue. Tell us what a crisis respite center is.
A crisis respite center is an alternative for people instead of going to a hospital or, you know, some other emergency location, somebody that's in distress, maybe hasn't slept, is depressed, can come to the respite center, kind of like a bed and breakfast model. Everybody has a private room. Staff are there to talk to you. You can come and go. And it is a place that allows people to kind of get take stock of what they're going through in their life. But it's done in a way that's very supportive. And the day is filled with a lot of, attention to the person. So as an alternative to being in a hospital where you're mostly sitting around all day with nothing to do and the doors are locked, this is a place in the community that people can really get their bearings. And one of the features, so we have several features. One is that the guests and the staff make meals together. We have a farmer's market nearby 4 days a week, so there's trips out to that. There's a dog run in the park across the street, very popular place for people to go. And then there's structured groups during the day, depending on what people are interested in. So there's lots of opportunities for people to begin to recover and to contemplate on what's going on in their life. And what's also nice, people can come back, so we have groups and meals and barbecues and stuff, so that after you've been there and you've made connections with other guests and the staff, you can maintain those and develop friendships and supports for going forward.
Steve, as you were talking, I was thinking, who knows what problems could have been avoided if there had been a crisis respite center like that for somebody troubled and just at the end of his or her rope and ready to explode. Who knows what problems could have been avoided if there was just some place for them to go?
So this is it's a model that has been around for a while. It's been very hard to get going in New York. We got, with the city, we got a large federal grant to launch the program in 2013. And now we're sort of moving forward with a combination of city and state funds and Medicaid reimbursement. So hopefully we can keep it going and expand it. There's way too many people still going to emergency rooms, sitting in emergency rooms for hours and spending time in hospitals when we could do this. And it's much cheaper than being an inpatient in a hospital. And it just has the longer term benefits are extraordinary.
How many residents can it handle at a time and how long?
So we have 8 private rooms. Mm-hmm. That's a typical size for these kinds of places. And people stay an average of 6 to 7 days. So a typical month will have around 35 guests. Referrals come from all over the place, all over the city.
Some on staff have been there, as they say. They have been where the people they are helping are. And I understand that that's the way it's designed.
Yes. So we have 14 full-time staff. They're all people with a lived experience. They've been, in hospitals themselves. Many of them have had encounters with the police, have been handcuffed, and they really have some very unique insight into what people go through. When we advertise for the staff, we had about 800 applications. So this was back in 2012, and we whittled that down to the people we hired. A lot of the staff are still in place, and people went through extensive training. So it's not just that you've been through something that qualifies you to do the work. You have to have an aptitude and an empathy for the work, but also we do a lot of training on how to listen to people and how to talk to people and what's an appropriate way to share your personal experience to support somebody else and not be just saying, well, this happened to me, therefore, you know, this is what, you know, you should be doing.
And non-judgmental, I guess that's that.
Yeah.
It looms large over what you do there.
That's right. Okay. So this is for all of our programs. We have over almost 1,200 units of housing now, and a lot of our staff have a lived experience. Our goal is to have at least half of our staff. We are on our just most recent staff orientation on Monday. I had 7 new staff, and all of them actually had a history of treatment in the mental health system. So that was very satisfying.
So where do you go from here, Steve?
So we want to expand the number of respite services and crisis services in general. We've been leading the advocacy effort to get the police trained, what they call crisis intervention training. So they, when they do encounter somebody that's in a psychiatric crisis, they can de-escalate the situation and not make it worse. And what there needs to be added to that is the places for the police to take people that are not an emergency room or not a police precinct. And those, you know, locations, again, there's other parts of the country that have an extensive system. New York has been slow to put that together. So we would like to be, help with that. And just crisis response in general, we're very much in favor of seeing Rikers Island close. About 30 to 40% of the people that are at Rikers Island have a history of mental illness, and it's really just like the worst possible place for somebody to be who's already having emotional problems. It really just makes their situation worse. So creating alternatives that intercept people before they go into the criminal justice system and to get them into treatment and supports as an alternative.
Why do you suppose that there has been nowhere for people with mental crises to go? There seems to have been more of a system, as you mentioned, many years ago, and now that certainly isn't the case. And is there an interest in setting up more of these crisis respite centers to help? Or are we going in that direction, or are we still not responding?
So in New York, the system that was created was paid for by Medicaid. And Medicaid paid for 28 days in hospital. Mm-hmm. Medicaid paid for medication. Medicaid paid for clinic visits. So that was the system, hospitals, medication, and clinics. In other parts of the country, Medicaid has been used more creatively to pay for things like respite services and crisis services. Each state negotiates how it wants to use their Medicaid dollars with the federal government. In New York, until very recently, that's starting to change now, and so we can use Medicaid dollars now to pay for respite services. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, you follow the money, and the money has paid for the system that we have. So it's been, there's been rethinking now about how to reform Medicaid and use the dollars in more towards prevention services than treatment after the fact.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to educate us about what's happening in this regard and for telling us about the Crisis Respite Center. Come back and let's do this again.
If anybody is interested, just go to our website under Connect or Services button. There's a list of all of our programs, education, community drop-in center, housing. It's all available.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.